Welcome to Thinking Out Loud, a weekly look at people, places, and happenings that are uniquely mid-Missouri. This week, we talk with two artists about their events upcoming later this week. My name is Trevor Harris, and I'm sitting in this week for Thinking Out Loud host Darren Helwich. This Saturday at 7 at the Missouri Theater, 13-year-old classical performance pianist Umi Garrett joins the Missouri Symphony Orchestra for her return visit to Columbia. We'll hear from Umi later in the show about her performance that's part of the Missouri Symphony Society's Hot Summer Nights series. My first guest on this evening's Thinking Out Loud is Columbia author William Least Heat Moon. His book Blue Highways was on the New York Times bestseller list for 42 weeks in 1982 and 83, and since then, he's written 7 full-length books, numerous articles, and has a new book out on University of Missouri Press called Writing Blue Highways.
We're here to talk about my new book, Writing Blue Highways, and the upcoming talk at the library this Thursday, the 5th of June, 7 o'clock. Bring your own bottle of wine. I think we're going to find C-SPAN there taping for a later broadcast. So if somebody listening would like to come out and at the end of my rambling, whatever I'm going to say, stand and ask a question, be a chance to have a little bit of fame on C-SPAN. C-SPAN's nice because it repeats those broadcasts several times over the course of a year or two.
And they have a fair number of I've seen a fair number of focus on authors and books on C-SPAN that I thought it was just a camera trained on the House of Representatives and somebody filibustering to an empty chamber. But increasingly when I'll flip through it, I don't have cable TV, but if I'm in a hotel or somebody's house and I flip through, they're, often as not, they have an author on.
Yeah, they're very good about that. And they've become, that is, C-SPAN has become an important force for helping writers get word out to the readers that there's a new book out. So I've been with them, probably on 4 shows, 5 shows over the years, and you can tell when C-SPAN does a little interview because it makes a difference in sales for the book. And as Truman Capote said, you know, the boy has to hustle his book. And it's become even more so that way of late with the changes in publishing now. A writer must do more and more of the promotion, himself, herself. Less of it comes from the publisher. And that's another indication of the way corporations are inflicting themselves on our lives, in which they gain the power and the people lose their power. One man's opinion.
Well, I brought you in here because I knew you'd share some opinions with us. So let's take a step back to... It was 1977, and you were in the process of, had you finished your drive with Ghost Dancing? You'd done your research in 77, and you were starting to write?
1978, yes. I left the first day of spring in 1978, came home almost the first day of summer of 1978. I was living over near the Stevens campus at the time. And I started looking for a job, found a job at the Boone County Courthouse in the probate court. Judge Ellen Roper hired me there. And for a year, I worked as a clerk in the probate court to help the underwriting of the writing of Blue Highways. The first day of writing on the book was just happened to be July the 4th. That day, I wrote 12 pages, and I thought, well, I'll be finished by Christmas on this. Little did I know what was ahead of me, and I didn't finish the book until 4 years later. It took 4 years to write Blue Highways. And I should emphasize here that the title, sometimes I get careless in my pronunciation, the title is Writing Blue Highways. Sometimes people hear that as writing. That was the earlier book. This is the Writing Blue Highways, the writing of the book itself.
So why now, 30-plus years later, did you decide, what inspired you to write a book about the writing of Blue Highways?
I think that I see writing Blue Highways as a kind of report on what it's like to try to make something that has never been seen before, to create something utterly new. And I hope that the book has to do, or let me say it this way, I hope that the book will help people in numerous creative endeavors. It isn't just about writing books. It's also about making anything that as I said, that is new. It's about the creative process, the emotional requirements, the financial requirements, the technical requirements, in this case, words, the expenditures that one must go through to get something out. So I think that somebody who might be working, say, in economic theory may find some ideas in this. Somebody who's working on a mechanical invention, yes, because the creative process shares so many of the same problems, the same challenges.
The number one thing that stuck with me in you describing the process of getting down on paper the trip that you had just made was discipline, and that you had to force yourself to put your butt in that chair and type or write, and then sleep and get up and do it again with some clerking thrown in weekdays to make the bills and draw your $111 a week check.
Yes, yes.
But discipline is what struck me finishing the book as the number one thing, besides some talent, that a creative person has to have to be able to get that work out there.
Discipline is the major thing, I think. If there is talent, and I'm not saying that I have it, I'm just saying, I'm speaking generally now. If there is talent, then it's not going to be of much use unless there's good discipline, because nobody is so talented that in the case of writers, that first draft, that second draft, that third draft is going to work. I thought it would. I thought when I hit the fourth draft of Blue Highways that I was just about finished. Well, it turned out that there were 10 different versions of the book. I say different. They got the differences were fewer and fewer as we went on. But I ended up with a box of boxes of paper which stood 1 meter high. They weighed 60 pounds. And in those boxes, there were something very close to 2 million words. And I was working for most of the manuscript on a manual typewriter, so every word would contain a keystroke for every letter. I did, toward the end, at the very end, the very last draft, get an electric typewriter, but still it was a keystroke. There were no word processing programs out then, so that's one of the reasons it took 4 years. But as I went along through those years, I kind of learned what I was trying to do with the help of my great editor and friend, Jack Lezebnik, who I'm sure some KBIA listeners will remember. I wouldn't be published without Jack's guidance.
One of my questions was to talk to me about who Jack was, who he was in general, and who he was for you.
Jack taught English at Stevens and became, when I was teaching, became my friend over the years and counselor. He was 16 years older than I was, a World War II veteran, a good reader, and a really excellent editor. And by watching him edit my prose, I learned how to revise. It was that great gift that he gave me. I went in there and I had no idea about how to rework what I'd put down, a very little idea. Even though I at that time I had a PhD from the university in the English department, you would think that a PhD in English would know how to write. Well, I knew the basics, but to make a sentence sing, I hope they sing, that's what Jack was good at. And it got so he was my editor and read everything I wrote up through Roads to Quoz. He died before that book came out, so I didn't have his help on that. But by then, working together with him over the other, what was it, six books, I learned what he had to teach. And in fact, the last thing we did together, I was disagreeing with him almost as much as I was agreeing with his ideas. But he, whenever he pointed out something he thought was weak or incorrect, I always considered it because he rarely was wrong. His solution might not be what I wanted, but he had identified a problem that was there that other readers would pick up on.
You're a lucky man to have somebody like that, or have had somebody like that.
Oh, after my parents, I mean, he's the most important adult person older than I am was in my life.
You talk a lot in the book, Writing Blue Highways, about the process. You also talk about the technique, and there's a fair number of pages devoted to talk of typewriters, pencils, word processors, the digital word versus words written with your digits.
Yes.
So now, in 2014, how do you prefer to write?
Well, my second book, Prairie Earth, I had gotten a $5,000 machine that would do very simple word processing. The screen was about a half an inch wide and 4 inches wide, so I could just see a few words at a time. A lot of people remember those. But it did speed things up. But even then, and it's true today, that I still begin with a lead pencil, a number two lead pencil. I use the cheapest notebook paper I can find. So I have nothing committed to what I'm doing. It feels very rough, crude, and I never think at that point that, oh, I just have written a good sentence. I'm aware all the time that this is just a draft. This is a try, an essay at making a good sentence. And if things are going badly, it's quite therapeutic to take that piece of cheap notebook paper and wad it up and throw it across the room and start again. I can go just as fast at that stage with a pencil as I could on my laptop. For a while, although I pretty well discontinued that, for a while I would do a second draft with a fountain pen. Then I would go to whatever mechanical device beyond a fountain pen I was using then. Now I go from pencil usually to my laptop. And that's where a word processing system is so wonderful, because things that aren't changed, I don't have to key them in again. They're there. So I'm correcting only what needs to be corrected. And that's really speeded me up. I think if I'd had that kind of an advantage, that is a laptop, in 1978, 79 through 82, and when I was writing Blue Highways, I might have cut a year off of the process. But it wouldn't have shortened it, I think, more than that, because it just takes time to get quality work down. This Thursday at the library, 7 o'clock, I'm going to talk some about what I call layering, in which a writer slowly builds a kind of strata of ideas and of sentences that change as the work goes on. What I read today from so many writers, I see good stories out there, but I see so much what I have to consider just shy of being incompetent expression, because the writer, I think, has gone too fast. There's a book out there now. It's going to win, probably going to win a National Book Award. I don't want to mention the title of it. But it's got big sales, and it apparently is a really gripping story. And I thought, well, I better take a look at this. I read the first page, and the first sentence had three howling, dangling modifiers. Well, people who aren't into language say, oh, yeah, big deal, dangling modifier. Well, dangling modifiers can cause confusion. But what it says to me is that this is a writer who is not dedicated to her craft, his craft. And it makes it tough for me then to read anything else beyond that. So I flipped further in the book and read a few more pages. And the prose just was dashed off. That's the wrong word, because this writer took some time to write this book, I understand. Maybe it is that writer had never had the advantage of having Jack Lezebnik as an editor, someone to show him or her how to work at making a sentence come to life.
Do you play that role for anybody now that Jack played for you?
Yes, my wife has a book coming out next year. We're not sure about the title, but I think it's going to be The Unknown Travels and Dubious Pursuits of William Clark, of the Lewis and Clark Expedition. She's found a lot of new material that shows Clark to be a man beyond what we thought he was. He's involved in some, as she says in her title, dubious pursuits. Well, my contribution to her book has been encouragement, but also trying to do for her writing what Jack did for mine. So I think we're teaching his passing. I mean, we're passing his teaching on down along the line. I hope so.
Do you teach?
I have not taught since 2005, and that was just a 7-week course up at Beloit College in Wisconsin. And I didn't particularly enjoy it. I thought when I was teaching full-time, my last time, I saw that the end of the road was there, the one that led me onto the Blue Highways, to write Blue Highways, the book. I thought, oh, this is going to kill me not to be able to teach. Now I'm grateful that I don't have to teach anymore. I think I do a better job writing probably than I did teaching. I think the people that I'm trying to get ideas across, I can reach them better through a book than trying to get 18-year-olds to pick up books and see what might be there.
And with writing Blue Highways, it's not that you've written a primer necessarily on how to write a book, but you've detailed your process and what worked for you and what didn't work for you. And I mentioned earlier, you talk a lot about technology, and I want to read a sentence here. And I'm this is dangerous, me reading your sentences. I'm going to have you read some of your sentences in a
minute. No, don't get me doing it. Everyone reads it better than I do.
A problem with – so this is on page 31 of Writing Blue Highways, the story of how a book happened, the new release from William Lee Steep Moon on University of Missouri Press, talking about technology and a love for a 1955 Olympia portable typewriter. A problem with electronic machines is that not only can they in themselves be a source of frustration, they also can't withstand the mildest physical expression of vexation. You talked earlier about crumbling up the paper. It sounds like you've broken some keyboards in your time as well.
The that little Olympic portable, which I got on my 16th birthday in 1956, has withstood many bangs of the fist over the years. In fact, there's a book that came out last year called Blue Highways Revisited by another Colombian, Ed Ayler, who some people know as a retired physician in Colombia. He retraced the Blue Highways route and took photographs. This book is out by the University of Missouri Press, too. There's a photograph in his book of this Olympia typewriter and a close-up of the little shield up near where the platen is on a typewriter, cracked and broken because of one night hitting that typewriter with my sandal during the writing of Blue Highways. These machines now, you know, I have to get up and walk around the desk or something when I get frustrated. And I understand it's not the machine. I know it's my brain. But, boy, sometimes you need to whack something. It's hard to whack your own brain. This is a new invention of mine as opposed to, say, an old invention. I'm going to make a little pad that people can keep by their laptops, the whacking pad. So when you get frustrated, you reach over and whack that thing, and it'll make a horrible sound that sounds like somebody is suffering other than yourself. Then I'm going to retire from writing.
I guess the thing I was left wondering about after reading Writing Blue Highways was how the experience of doing the trip and then writing the book changed you. Or what became more clear to you about William Lee Steep Moon after the doing of it? Because part of this was a restlessness that you just needed to get out and see, and the answers weren't right in front of you. The things you thought you had earned or were due to you just weren't coming.
I'm not sure restlessness is the word I would use. I had written over the 2 years preceding the Blue Highways trip in 1978, I had written just over 600 letters looking for a job teaching English. As I mentioned earlier, I had a PhD from Mizzou, and of those 600 letters, I got six requests for my dossier, nothing beyond just a request for it. So here's a man who is seen from the world, the academic world he wants to enter, that they don't want you. And I put 5 years of my life into getting that doctorate. So I felt that I'd been cheated. And part of the trip was to find a way out of that, but also to discover, although I did not know this when I began, to discover that, no, I hadn't been cheated. That's the way life works, that it happens that way. Worse things than that happen, and that I needed to build a new life, and it was up to me to do that and to try to do it without bitterness and anger. The writing of the book, those 4 years, really, in a way, served as a kind of therapy. But I don't want to imply there that Blue Highways is about me. I don't consider that it is about me. I'm simply a tool in there. The traveler is a tool in there to get to other people and what they have to say. I think the book is very much about the people who are in the book. There are 36 people whose portraits appear, and there are many more people who appear in the book simply in a paragraph. They're there only by words. The book is about them, and several of them who taught me critical information about rebuilding a new life. I have a feeling that what those people taught, that's a key part of what readers today see in that book. So once my editor in New York the other day, speaking of writing Blue Highway, said, so what do we got here? We've got a memoir about a memoir. And I did not like that expression. I said, Blue Highways is not a memoir. He said, oh, yes, we could call it a memoir. Well, you can call it what you want. But if you're going to call Blue Highways a memoir, then you're going to have to call the journals of Lewis and Clark memoirs. That book is ultimately not about me. It's about other people, and that's not the definition of a memoir. Now, this new book, Riding Blue Highways, does have a touch of autobiography, but once again, the autobiography, the narrator in there, call him William Trogdon, William Lee Steetman, he's there to elucidate, I hope, the ideas behind the book. Once again, that narrator is simply a tool to pry loose things and to unscrew this and tighten up that and, you know, consider the writer a screwdriver, a wrench. It's a tool.
Well said. I'm Trevor Harris. This is Thinking Out Loud. My guest this week has been William Lee Steetman. He has a new book out on the University of Missouri Press called Writing Blue Highways, the story of how a book happened. You can hear William Lee Steetman speaking this Thursday at 7 p.m. at Columbia's Daniel Boone Regional Library. The free talk will be held in the Friends Room. I'm grateful for your time. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Trevor, and thank you for being so well prepared.